Okay, we're going to continue chatting with Whitley Strieber about his work, The Supernatural, Alien Hunter, and of course, take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Whitley Strieber with us. Whitley, before we take calls, we're talking about your belief system, and I'd let you finish that up.
I was talking about the implant.
Implants, that was
By
your ear.
And in the ear, and what it has been, and what we found out about it. And I was just about to talk about the time it turned on when I was in Dr. Mallow's office. And when it turns on, the top of my ear especially becomes bright red. It's very noticeable. And he was excited because we were within a short walk on the Southwest Research campus of a signals acquisition laboratory. And so we went there, and they could not tell me whether or not they had found anything then. But later, I heard that it was the weirdest signal they had ever encountered coming out of that thing at the time. And, you know, I don't talk much, and I'm not going to talk much tonight about what it does and why it is such an important part of my life. But suffice to say that books like Supernatural would not exist without it. It is a wonderful thing. It is really it's marvelous. It is so, what it does is so far beyond anything I could have even imagined before it happened. I can make extraordinary synchronicities and things come up in my life just by asking. It's just wonderful. And I know it has to do with this object. And this, and the speech, for example, that I have been taking around now, and we're going to be doing again shortly, A New World, If You Can Take It, is important to somebody who's on the other side of this thing. They want to see how people react to it. And it's about how to empower ourselves in connection to this whole experience. It's a completely new envisioning of the whole UFO experience and the close encounter experience and what we can do to make our side of it genuinely valuable to us as a society.
To the calls. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Let's take some calls. You ready?
Bill
in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, George. Hi. Hi, Whitley. It's an honor and a pleasure to talk with you again. Whitley, a quick, very quick comment leading into one question for you. My quick comment is you are the most expert abductee experiencer, abductee that I've ever heard on any talk show, especially Coast to Coast AM. You know the subject of UFOs and especially alien abductions to a T. Now, my question to you is, in light of that, my question is, if Hillary Clinton becomes president of the United States as of this November 8th this year, and I hope she does, by the way, I hope Hillary Clinton is the next president of the United States, would you, after that election, offer yourself in some way, shape, or form that you can to contact the Clinton administration, particularly John Podesta, who I would assume would be Hillary Clinton's chief of staff, who was there in Bill Clinton's administration when Bill and Hillary were there in the 1990s, and they talked about UFOs back then, and you know that very well. My question specifically is, would you have yourself be a liaison or an advisor, or whatever you want to call it, an ambassador or advisor to the subject of disclosure in general, and to get as much knowledge out to the general public of the world, and especially the United States, as you can in particular?
Well, I'm going to do my own thing, and I, for example, have never wanted to get involved in anything that was classified, because my job is not to keep secrets, but to tell my stories as best I can, and to offer my understanding. So I'm a little bit uneasy about getting involved in any way with the government. I don't see where they would need me. I could certainly give advice if it came to trying to study the abduction phenomenon. In fact, in Supernatural and also in solving the communion enigma, there are whole programs outlined that show how we could study the people involved. And I would say to anyone that we have to start with ourselves. Something has been deposited in the human species in the form of experience. And if we begin to look at that experience and what it did to the minds and bodies of the people who had it and to the culture around them, we'll begin to understand it in a new way. We don't look at that, though. I would cooperate with them in a public way, certainly, but I wouldn't go behind the scenes and get involved with things that I could not then tell the public. That I will never do. It's not where I belong. I belong out here. This is where I want to be. So I would think, though, that the way this world works, that I would not necessarily be a person it would occur to them to call on. I wrote a letter about this to John Podesta. I never got any response.
Nothing.
From him. I tried to get, Leslie Keene knows him and knows how to get in touch with him, but she will not respond to me generally either. So I don't know. I'm just here.
Do you think
my thing, and that's what I'm going to keep doing.
Whitley, do you think most standing presidents are in the dark on the UFO situation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Richard Nixon was not in the dark.
No, he was not.
He wasn't because he was...
Jackie Gleason story, that was a great
Jackie
story.
Gleason story, but also he was vice president during the Eisenhower administration, and when both Eisenhower and Nixon, no one was keeping this kind of thing from presidents. I have a very interesting story about Jimmy Carter. You know, he was interested in this subject and going into office said he had seen a UFO and wanted to disclose what we knew about them once he reached office. And he apparently was given some sort of a briefing that upset him a lot. And subsequently, he has never been willing to speak about it at all. And in fact, when UFO researchers have confronted him about it, he has said, I would wish not to speak about that subject. Bill Clinton told Lawrence Rockefeller, according to what Rockefeller said to me, that this subject was sticky. It was something that he didn't want anything to do with. And he implied that if you got in, you'd get entangled in it if you got too close to it. So he must have known something, and obviously they did try to find things out in the Clinton administration. But you know, going back to a couple of people whose comments to me were the basis of my novel Majestic about the Roswell incident, General Arthur Exon and my uncle, Colonel Strieber, the two of them. General Exon in particular stated that so much of this was so secret that they didn't write it down. In other words, they kept it to them. They kept it out of. They didn't ever make records. And in 1989, I think he told me that he was still interfacing with the scientific group that worked on this because of the fact that even though he hadn't been officially involved since the mid-60s, when he was commandant at Wright-Patt, he still was needed because so much of the information was not in writing. And my uncle, a very interesting thing happened when I was with my uncle, who had told me he had handled the debris from Roswell when he was in the Air Materiel Command at Wright Field, it was then called Wright Field in 47. And he said to me one day at lunch, he said, have you seen the materials? And I said, no, I have not. And he said, well, if you had been able to describe them, we would have been able to talk further. There are some further things I would like to tell you about this. But unless you've seen the materials, I can't. And I thought to myself at the time, here is General Exon saying, some of this is so secret it's not written down, and here's my uncle trying to find out if I have a kind of coded awareness. In other words, if I've been in the presence of some sort of materials, and if I've seen them, then he can talk further. In other words, it's a kind of almost like a secret society, I would say. They were so secretive. And George, one of the greatest questions in my mind is, why is it such an extraordinary secret? And I think a secret, if Christopher Mellon, who Leslie interviews on the Huffington Post, is correct, a secret that has been lost within the government at this point, because it was so kept so well, it simply didn't survive the lifetimes of the people who were keeping it.
Would you be surprised if there was some political announcement of the existence of these UFOs and ETs?
No, I would not. I would not be surprised at all. I think it's time and past time. We need to have this perspective in our culture. We need to be able to finally start to look up a little bit, because there's a big universe out there. And the argument has always been, oh, well, distances are so great, they could never get here. And yet, Stephen Hawking and a Russian billionaire are getting ready to send a starship that travels at 20% of the speed of light to a nearby star. So, yeah, they can get here. I mean, if we can send, admittedly, it's going to not be much bigger. It's going to be pretty tiny. But we're going to do it. And if we can do that now, what if there's, you know, most of the sun-like stars in this galaxy are older than our sun. And what if these are civilizations that have survived over millennia, or if they're not even, as we were talking about earlier, if they're not even about kind of living on planets, if they're something else entirely, goodness knows what could be going on. And I think it's time for us to engage with this, because locked in our history, for academics to really dig into and research, and locked in the narratives of thousands and tens of thousands of close encounter witnesses, is extraordinary information about the human experience and the universe around us, and we're not even looking at it. That type of disclosure would open the door to the funding and granting of research money to really look at this. And that, I will tell you, I will guarantee, wonders will be found.
Randy, truck driving in Wyoming, west of the Rockies. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Hey, I'm glad to be able to talk to you tonight. Hey, I talked to George about this once before. I had aliens crawling on my car, and I've seen them closer than probably anybody that's ever seen aliens in the history of the world. But something prevents me from ever telling my story, and I'm just wondering how I can get that story out someday.
Prevents you from telling it? In other words, you feel like you can't say it, or?
No, I can tell. But the problem is, I've talked to people, and it's like they think I'm nuttier than a fruitcake. But no, they crawled on my hood, crawled up to my window. The thing George asked me, he says, well, what color was it? I'm going to say they was about as dark green as you could get, or dark gray as you could get, but kind of, they was almost gray, but they had like lizard type of skin. But I was 14 years old. I'm 63 now. It's been so long since I've seen them. that I, you know, I need to be hypnotized, and somebody could get a lot of information out of me, but I've tried and tried and tried to get people, somebody to listen, and I, something totally prevents me from ever doing that. I don't know what it is, but well,
you're not alone. There's tens of thousands of people out there with the same problem. And
nobody listens to them.
And nobody's going to listen until there is something to convince people who have been, I think, possibly even the victims of some sort of social engineering, maybe not planned, but it's effective anyway, that they believe that this is the last subject that any sane, serious person would look at. And they would just look down their noses at you. I know that because I get people looking down their noses at me all the time. Huh. It happens to me every day of my life.
You've become Teflon, though, haven't you?
Oh, I don't mind
it
anymore.
Let it roll right
Listen,
off.
What I have in this life from my relationship with the visitors, people can step on me all they want. I have got gold, and I'm very, very glad I do what I do, because the school of wisdom that I have been in with them all these years for half of my life is a great blessing.
Can't replace that one.
You can't ever replace it.
You know, by the way, I miss Roger Lear, don't you?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I miss Roger like the Dickens. Roger was a podiatrist. He was not a man who was easily able to use his career skills and his licensing rights to work on this, but he did it anyway. And that's, you know, he tried so hard. And, you know, not only that, he was also a lot of fun as a human being.
He sure was.
The adventures we had, me and Roger and Bill Mallow at Southwest Research, oh my, I can't look back on them so fondly.
Irreplaceable.
Oh, he was a great guy.
Whitley, the websites, of course, unknowncountry.com, Streber.com, and, of course, you have Dreamland available to people to listen to. Do you not?
Dreamland is my weekly podcast, and there for subscribers to unknowncountry.com, there is also a biweekly podcast called Awakening, which is a journey with me and my wife, who is very much part of it.
She's still around in some way.
Into the nature and experience of the soul.
All right, stay with us, Whitley. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast on our next program. Keith Scott Mumby joins us for a while as we talk about his look at the psychic realm through the eyes of a physics instructor. And then Joseph Jacobs, the psychic, joins us on Coast to Coast AM. And hey, don't forget also to watch Beyond Belief, our television program, by going to the website beyondbelief.com. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Whitley Strieber with us, and of course, fast night tonight, Whitley, huh?
Yeah, it has been.
Since you've been doing this, what has been for you the most satisfying aspect of your work?
Of this experience?
Yes.
Two things. One, getting into control and of my relationship with the visitors, and two, the people I've met who are also having these experiences. And, you know, when I was at the Ozark Mountains UFO conference.
With the late Dolores Cannon's event.
Yes, that's right. I looked out over that audience and those faces, and I thought to myself, this is an incredible time in which to be alive and to be able to participate in it the way that I am is a wonderful thing, a wonderful experience. And, you know, it's been very hard on a lot of levels.
It sure has.
First, the close encounter experience is very difficult. And, extremely challenging at every level, intellectually, emotionally, and physically. Nothing could happen to you that's more difficult than this. And on the one hand, on the other hand, the way the culture handles it is so awful. And that you know, with all the rectal probe jokes and things that I went through back in the...
Oh, my God. The ridicule must have been unbelievable.
I mean, it was real hard. I mean, somebody gets raped and everybody's laughing about it. That's hard. That's something that's real hard to bear. And I did bear it. I bore it for years. So, but when I look back, I would not do this. Because it's nobody else has ever been in this situation. I'm completely alone here, and it's a wonderful experience. You know, it's like being climbing a mountain and that nobody ever climbed before, and you know, you get to see what's up there. It's really extraordinary.
I wanted to ask you about the late Bud Hopkins. Did you know him well?
I knew him quite well. It's in the early days, but we had a falling out. I've never quite understood what it was. He made a lot of different statements about what was wrong that I had somehow cheated him by the way my book was published, which I didn't understand.
I don't get that either. It's your book.
It was published by my publisher, not by me. I didn't have anything to do with it. But apparently it was published shortly before his book, Intruders, was published, and he blamed me for this.
And you got the lion's share of the publicity, no doubt, right?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I was a major author. I was a very well-known writer.
Of course.
And Bud was not known at all. In fact, his book kind of flew on the coattails of mine. And
you probably helped bring his along.
Of course it did. And he didn't see it that way, and he wanted, there were certain things that he absolutely did not want any part of. He believed that these were aliens from another planet who were doing this, absolutely. And when things came up, like people were seeing dead friends and relatives in context of close encounter experiences, Bud wanted to just wipe that off the map. He figured that was some kind of perceptual mistake that these people were making. And he may be right, I don't know. But because Ann and I talked about this before we even started, and she said the one thing we have to do is we lay it on the table, all of it, because it's not up to us, and we can't know how this is going to fall out. We can't censor anything. We have to say it all. And Bud did not agree. He felt like there were things you should not say. And if someone said, well, the aliens came and they had my mother with them, and my mother's been dead for 15 years, he didn't feel you should say that. But I disagreed, and I felt we should say it. And so we were not friends over the last part of his life, but I do remember very fondly what a charming guy he was. I missed that friendship.
Right. And he was good at what he did.
He was very good at what he did, and he contributed a major thing, something very major to this. I mean, he was the one who brought forward the whole idea of alien abduction, and that is one of the key beginnings of our growing understanding of this mysterious phenomenon. Maybe that's not the final answer, but it is one of the first acknowledgments that something was going on that was not explained.
Let's go to Baltimore now. Robert's with us on Coast to Coast. Robert, go ahead. You're on with Woodley Strieber.
Very good. Thank you, George.
You're welcome.
Woodley, I have a suggestion that I think maybe it's already happened, but in regard to what you were just talking about, as a matter of fact, the matter of abductions, we have Stephen Greer having said that he thinks it may be our own military or our own U.S. Some people there are doing the abductions. Richard Dolan.
Richard Dolan
came out and said that. Well, he thinks that maybe Stephen spoke too soon. And what I'm getting at is that I think that there's so many of you. If Linda Moulton Howe we have Corey Good making statements. I don't need to name them. There are about 12 people who are making statements and writing books, including yourself. And my question to you is, do you ever get together with these people and sort of form an organization? Because the people that are fighting you, that is the people who want to keep it secret, they obviously have a vast organization. They may not all know what each other are doing, but someplace there they have a well-organized group.
Well, I would say, Robert, it's pretty fragmented. And Whitley,
it is fragmented.
Ahead.
It's fragmented because nobody is sure what's going on, and everybody has different ideas. Linda Moulton Howe and I are good friends, and I'm certainly friendly with Richard Dolan. I am in a situation where I won't take the final step and draw conclusions. I won't say, for example, that the breakaway civilization that Richard believes in really exists. I won't say that I think that military abductions are the answer. I will say that these things, there's a lot of evidence of all of these things, but one of the most interesting things about this phenomenon is, if you look at it objectively, there's a lot of evidence for every theory. Every theory has support. Breakaway civilization. Who put the implant in my ear? They put the darn thing in there without breaking the skin, for goodness sakes. I mean, they were people with an extraordinary technology in their possession. So maybe Richard is right. And as regards to the military thing, Dr. Greer he wants this to be a certain way, just like Bud did. Bud wanted it to be aliens who were doing things to us without our permission, and that we should acknowledge this culturally and socially and put a stop to it if we could. Dr. Greer wants us to have a more benign and productive relationship with the aliens. The problem is, who's right, and who are the aliens? Are there any aliens even here? I don't even know those. We need to all take a step back. And in that sense, there could be an organization, but I'm not so sure that it would be an organization that would be really focused on the UFO community so much. I think it might very well have its focus primarily in the academic community and secondarily in the scientific community, and that then an organization like that might make some headway. But the clash of theories within the UFO community and beliefs is so great that I think it'll stay fragmented.
I think so, too, and that's unfortunate. Dee Dee in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Dee Dee, good morning. Welcome to the show.
George, you're wonderful. Whitney Streeter, I've been wanting to talk to you for a while.
You've got it.
Listen, you're saying that on one occasion you said earlier that you believe that they're here, and you just said you're not so sure. I want to make you guys sure, especially you, George. I'm having experiences right now with a person that lives upstairs from me. And I found that there are computer programs that are alienated computation. And also, I was living in one particular place where me and this guy came face to face, you know, and he was looking at me like, you know who I am, because I pulled the maneuver. And I was like, God, if this is an alien, you know, something will manifest. And sure enough, this guy howled out a particular sound that was just not even normal. Then when we got together face to face, I think I was leaving out of the building. He just turned around in my face and was like, "You know who I am." And another occasion, there was a guy that was living upstairs from me, and he began to speak to me telepathically. And he said that we're here, we're going to change things. Life is not going to be the same way that it is now. I don't read books. I don't watch TV. He says, my thing is I'm always working on something. And in this particular building that I'm in right now, there's a, I don't know, they said that she's a weird-looking lady. And she runs all kinds of alienated programs. I hear spaceships outside. This is for real, for real. And I see them coming in, you know, the building.
What? Who's coming in the building?
Aliens.
What do they look like?
Okay, this one particular one, just like that guy that was on earlier, said that he was 14 and he had an altercation about his car.
Right.
This one, I pretended I didn't see it. I was in the laundry room at the dryer. This is recently. And this thing came in the door. You know, I didn't turn around to see if it was a person or what. Okay, so it went back out and it came back in. It went by the, right beside me at the garbage can, totally gray, slim. And
with the big head, the dark eyes?
No, it didn't have a really big head. The head was a medium size, but he was slender, very slender.
So, Whitley, why are, and hang with us here, Dee Dee, why are these creatures hanging around like little apartment buildings and things?
Well, I don't think it's a question I can answer, largely because I have no idea of whether or not that's a correct interpretation of whatever the listener's
situation is. Yeah.
You know, bearing in mind that this message that we are here and we're going to change things goes back a long time. It was first delivered in recorded history during the time of the Merovingian kingdom in southern France in the early Middle Ages, over 1,000 years ago, and yet they still haven't landed. So I wonder if the message has another meaning, one that has something more to do with the human mind than it does with aliens, and yet at the same time, if we went to another planet, we might be very secretive about our presence there, but for the reason that our scientists, anthropologists, and academics would want to study the civilization and the people and the world without interrupting it. And as soon as we showed up, the entire focus of the culture that we were trying to learn about would be on us, and everything would change for them. So we would be just like we find ourselves. We would be very secretive too. As far as actually intervening and changing our world, I suppose that if the planet begins to fall apart and there's the cultures, the human societies are going to be destroyed, there could be some sort of intervention. I wouldn't be too surprised to find that happen. But I don't think that it's going to happen except under very dire and very unusual circumstances. Otherwise, if we are being observed, their process is going to be to remain in the background, almost certainly.
Let's go to Jackson, Mississippi. Hello, Denver. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm very impressed with your background. But look, I was a personal friend of Riley Martin.
Uh-huh.
I like that.
God rest his soul, huh?
God rest his soul. And, you know, I was very impressed with him. Just to give you a little bit back my background, I'm ordained minister. I had 33 years with the federal government. And with the Air Force was mainly that's what. But what I want to say is, I wish Whitney could have read Riley Martin's book, The Coming of Ten. Did you read that book?
Whitley, I don't know. Do you know Riley Martin? Did you know him?
No.
He was, of course, always on the Howard Stern show. Had an alien encounter when he was younger, and he was on our show a couple times with Art, and I think once with me a long time ago. I read his book, though. He was quite a guy.
Well, I didn't, and I don't know much of anything about him at all.
read the book, Common Obtain. I guarantee you, if you read that book, you appreciate it, Whitney, with your experience.
Well, thank you for recommending it.
Okay, very good. Whitley, just a few minutes left. What's new on your plate, sir?
What's new on my plate? Well, we're thinking that Supernatural might be made into a miniseries.
Oh, my gosh.
Which would be wonderful. And
good for you.
I have been trying to get somebody to get the courage up to make a series out of my book, Critical Mass, which is about nuclear terrorism, and I think it's a very important book, and it should be addressed in television, but I've pitched it all over Hollywood, and so far everybody's loved the pitch, but everybody's also been scared to do the show.
They're scared to do it, yeah.
We're kind of at an impasse with that one.
Who was your publisher on that? Was that the Tor?
Tor Books, yeah. Tor has been my publisher for my fiction for a long time, and Torture Penguin for my nonfiction.
Good. And is Bob Gleason your editor?
Bob is my editor.
He's one of a kind, isn't he?
He's a very special man. He's a remarkable man. And if you ever spend any time with Bob sipping a few cold ones, he is a master of... He has a vast
He's
memory.
Got great stories.
Great stories, and... Boy, can he quote poetry.
Well, he's a great author himself.
And a terrific author himself, and was absolutely crazy about it.
He was a great guy. He's my editor, too, with the books that have been over there. Whitley, we're out of time. Keep in touch with me, my friend. Whatever you need, you let us know, okay?
Thank you, and folks, thank you so much for listening to me.
And I'll see you at Contact in the Desert in June in the Joshua Tree. That'll be fascinating and fun. Great programs for you all week long, and don't forget, Friday... It's Friday the 13th. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.